This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 472, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
You're nobody till somebody loves you. You're nobody till somebody cares. You may be king, you may possess the world and its gold. But gold.
Hello, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 472. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and that's my co-host, apparently Eros, the god of love. Is that how we think of ourselves these days?
If we're going to do a show, we're going to do a show with love advice. I wanted to feel confident, so I've renamed myself, formerly Josh Flanagan, now Eros, the god of love.
Is it because you're stuck in the house under 15 feet of snow and
there's
something else
so
to do?
Much snow.
Make more babies?
Definitely not. Just saying, for making no more babies. You hear now?
We are iFanboy, and we like comics. Everyone can read a stack of comics. One of us picks their favorite book. We call that the pick of the week. We'll talk about that book, other comics, talk about some other stuff, read some listener mail. It'll be fun. And here's your spoiler warning. It's a review show. There'll be some, so be careful. And before we get to the pick, this is Valentine's Day weekend. Happy Valentine's Day for all you lovers out there. All you lovers out there.
I was going to say, you missed a chance to say that really sexy, and then you came back and you delivered, and I just, you know, I think we all appreciate it.
And so this episode, first of all, I don't know about you, Josh, but I had a pretty light week. So there wasn't I didn't have a lot of books to want to talk about. So we're going to talk about fewer books than normal because in addition to doing your romance email questions, which we have many.
This is what you've all come for.
There's also some big news happened in the last week of comics, so we're going to hit on that a little bit too. So we're going to talk about comics, then talk about a little bit of news, and then we're going to get to your romance questions. So thank you all for sending those in. But before we get to those, Josh, Eros, the god of love, had the pick of the week.
Yeah. The pick of the week is Southern Bastards number 7. It was the first book I read. I had no doubt it was going to be the pick of the week. I read some other very good books, but never once did it waver. And for me, I would say that the reason that this was the pick of the week, the reason I feel like this was a little bit of a breakthrough issue for the way that I was viewing this book. Now, I know this has been pick of the week before. I know we've talked about it. I've enjoyed it very much. I feel like this was the moment where it really clicked in for me, where I was like, okay, I wasn't just liking it a lot. I was like, oh, this is a really, really excellent thing. Mm-hmm. And the reason for there's a couple of reasons for that. Okay. One, this was the moment that I saw that what Jason Aaron brought to Scalped. Mm-hmm. When we spent time with Dash, and then we flipped and we spent a lot of time. Was it Red Crow?
Yes.
Does that sound right? Uh-huh. It's been a little while. I haven't thought about it. And we got to see both sides of their lives. And all of a sudden, like, there wasn't a protagonist and an antagonist anymore. There were just characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I've enjoyed the sort of flashback to Boss.
Coach Boss. Please use his proper title. He earned it.
Yeah. But this is when I realized, I was like, he's going to fully flesh out this character. And we're going to spend as much time on his side of the table as anybody else's. And I don't know why that didn't occur to me, but it's exactly what the thing that I loved about Scalped. And Scalped was my favorite running ongoing series for years.
Mm-hmm.
And it really felt like it all sort of clicked into place here. And I was like, these are all the things that I really dig about it. And then, you know, at the same time, I think that the sort of the love of football that I assume Jason Latour has this kind of love, but I know that Jason Aaron does, especially for Alabama football. You know, it's coming through here, and I've always said for like a long I don't like sports.
Mm-hmm.
As a thing to watch scores, as a thing to like who won this week, who's up in the standings, who's the best players. I don't care about that, but I love sports as a reflection of culture. Right. I could watch sports documentaries till the cows come home because they are an incredible reflection of the world around them and what's going on at the time. And that's what this book does. It's like one of those things where, you know, I think I've said, like, somebody says, oh, I don't like a movie about boxing because I don't like boxing. Like, the movie's not about boxing.
Right.
That's not what it is. Like, this book's not about football, but football is a key element or even a character of the book. And
Well, it's about life. I think and mm-hmm. football is life in these small southern towns.
Yeah. And to me, that is 100% valid and 100% interesting. You know, that's the thing that people build their worlds around. And you know, definitely more than where I live. You know, like, I could watch all of Friday Night Lights and I'm still not what I would say is a football fan. But through this light in this way, the way that he's using the sport, I really, really enjoy that. And I just think that for whatever reason, this issue 7, like, it's all really coming together. I feel like everybody's totally hitting their stride. And, you know, because there's a lot of work to be done in the beginning of a series where you're introducing people, places, the tone, what you're trying to get across, all that stuff. And then this is the part where, like, okay, now run. Right. You know, like, they were just going with it. And I really found myself, like, I was thinking of all this stuff as I read it. And I was like, oh, I have things to talk about with this book. It was all clicking for me, and I was understanding what was going on, you know, from a sort of larger artistic level. I felt, and it's really impressive.
Well, I still
it's all that stuff.
For me, I'm still waiting a little bit for it to run. I really like this issue, and I like the series a lot, quite a bit. I just want to get to the story. This is the classic, you know, a storytelling technique of opening a story up with a particular arc. Get to a pretty awesome cliffhanger and then take a step back and flesh out some of the characters. And I like that a lot. I'm just very excited to get to the actual story itself. And I know this is part of the story, but I'm excited to get to the daughter and everything.
I mean, remember, like, with Scalped, there are a lot of ebbs and valleys and eddies, and we go off to the side, you know, and
yeah,
and
I think
all
the difference
that
is I like
was
those characters more than I like these characters so far.
Oh, really? I mean,
I don't like Coach Boss at all.
I feel like this. I'm waiting to see the moment. Like, what happens to it? Like, I don't know. From his point of view.
From his point of view, he's not a bad guy.
Or maybe he is, you know, but he's not there yet. And I don't. Yeah, I know, but that wasn't the same with Lincoln Redcrow. Lincoln Redcrow, like, you get the sense like he knew he was a bad guy. And he wasn't entirely happy with it, but he's like, well,
we don't know what modern Boss thinks. We know what. Just at a high school Boss, but just at a high school Boss isn't a bad guy, but
right.
But you know, there's a lot of road between then and where he is now, where he's ordering the murder of people, and actually,
I guarantee you, it's a better story than Star Wars Episode 2 and 3, though.
I don't know what those things are.
And I mean, like, I'm guessing that his story will be more interesting than murdering a bunch of sand people and just going, all right, I'll kill the children.
I don't know what you're talking about.
That's all I remember about those things.
Jason Aaron, yeah, he's got a great beard and he writes real good. But for me, Jason Latour, I want to talk about how much energy and atmosphere and character he brings to these people and these places and these things that are happening in this book.
I want to say that also clicked for me this week.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I've been enjoying what he's been doing, but this time I was like, okay, this is really good. It felt a lot like Scalp to me. That like the art even did.
Well, I don't think the art looks like the art of Scalp. What I do think is that it creates a very vibrant and unique atmosphere that Scalp the same way Scalp looked like no other book on the stands and felt very authentic. Which is funny considering it was drawn by a guy from Spain. I think this book is also looks very unique, like nothing else on the stands, and it has a very lived-in feeling, and it feels very authentic. And I think that they both accomplish the same kind of thing in that way.
He's got those like all the characters have those faces. It looks in no way photorealistic, but you know, it's good cartooning. Like it reminds me of it reminds me a little bit of Guerra. But it's a little more unrealistic,
I
suppose.
That
so it's almost
in the face. Everybody looks like they got a broken
nose.
Yeah, well, I like that.
So it also reminds me of Jeff Lemire of Essex County,
yes,
kind of like there's a touch of that in the faces and the noses and the you said worn in, but like it's just like the people look kind of tired. Like he's, you know, like when he draws the blind coach guy, they're all kind of beaten down by life, and you can see it
on their faces. And also, there's a lot of brutal violence, not just on the football field, but around it. And you really feel every crunch of every bone in the hits and the punches and the smacks and the beatdowns with pipes. And it really is a visceral feeling book. And I sympathize with Coach Boss in this issue for sure. He's someone who has a talent. And he's trying desperately to use that talent to make a better life, and his vindictive, his own coach is keeping him, screws him basically, keeps him from going to college and playing for Bear Bryant in Alabama, and instead, poisons every college and tries to recruit him. So now he's stuck being the ball boy of his high school, and destined to become coach himself. Always with the little shorts, though, never wavering from the little shorts.
Never waver from the little shorts.
He's got the legs.
How large you get?
It's also really hot down there, so I get it.
It's true. It's humid. I guarantee you, that's not a modern breathable fabric.
No, it's a polyester.
It's not.
It's not a cotton. It's a polyester for sure.
It's gonna lead to some chafing, is what I'm basically getting.
I also appreciate the tucked in T-shirt into the tiny shorts. It's a look, and you really got to commit to it.
Yeah,
I couldn't do it.
It's a
props to you, Coach Boss.
I'm not built for it. I know that.
I don't even need
to try it out.
You can smell the barbecue in this book. It's not a book to read when you're hungry.
Yeah.
And not that there's even any barbecue in this arc as there was in the first arc, but it has that authentic feel. And if you read the letters pages, it's a really interesting letters page because it's full of Southern angst from people who live there or used to live there. And it's a really interesting conversation going on in the letters page.
You know where you're getting the barbecue from? If you flip through it, it's basically barbecue colored.
It's true.
the only colors in this book are those of barbecue.
That's very true. I didn't think about that, but now it's like subliminal.
Yep.
Big barbecue got to Jason Aaron and Jason Latour.
Mm-hmm.
Can't trust big barbecue. Yeah.
Oh, there it is.
What else did there you do?
Just a great book. For number five, if we can just carry on with the Jason Aaron parade.
All right.
Maybe we feel bad because we weren't especially kind to the Star Wars 2 last week.
I didn't even realize it was Jason Aaron on back-to-back. That's because I'm dumb.
Yeah, no, I did that on purpose.
I know, I'm dumb.
I really liked this issue. I liked what we did with Odin a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Odin's a dick. And I thought that was really fun, like to just really get him into there. It's not like beneath all that exterior that there's a loving father. Like, he's not.
And that is really interesting, right? He's really angry that there's somebody parading around as his son and wants to get to the bottom of it. And that, to me, is caked in the veneer of his dickishness. I mean, that seems to be a parental reaction.
I feel like it's his own ego because it was his hammer that he made.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know, he had the people tortured been jailed.
He gave his son, which she doesn't have anymore.
Yeah. Either way, you know, and he's kind of a dick to his wife, and he, you know, either he's Jack Arnold, but leader, but the creator of the world also.
Jack Arnold.
Besides
loved his
that,
kids.
Though, huh?
Jack Arnold loved his kids, though.
But he was angry. Who says he doesn't love his kids?
Well,
you could be a dick and love your kids. I think. Yeah. No. Definitely. Actually, no. I can confirm that. then the other part of it was. There's an interlude in this. We spend most of the time with Thor, who, by the way, has a scroll with a list of names on it that he needs to cross off.
There's something
because
very satisfying
he can't remember.
That. Yeah,
just... I know, but he's a god. I think he can remember a series of like 10 things.
Yeah, but there's a certain majesty to having the quill pen, having the little cup of ink, you know, licking the tip of the pen, dipping in the ink, and then crossing off a name that he knows is not for Thor.
He should have a servant for that.
He should use Wunderlist on
a minion,
on his phone.
Does it? So anyway, skipping that. There's an interlude here with the Absorbing Man, and it is Titania, whatever.
Yeah.
And the new Thor, where, I mean, let's be honest, this is a conversation
with the readers,
with the less progressive readers of the book, the people who complained, the people who are involved with that game thing, the people. Well, no, but like, and it's all very direct. And at first, my first instinct is this is a little on the nose. And then, but then my second instinct was I was like, this is what Marvel used to be.
Yes,
this is what Stan and Jack would do in the 60s and 70s, and what, you know, all those other guys in the 70s would do. Where Marvel books got that way because they were a little bit edgy, they were a little bit counterculture, and this is fairly bold when you have seen, you know, the reaction, like the way that many of the longtime fans have acted towards a lot of this stuff. They're basically taunting them, and I really liked that at the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot, you know, like Creel says something along the lines of like, you know, he calls it was this feminist crap, you know, like, and it's all just putting it right on the table, and then we don't care.
Right.
And I after I thought about that, and it was all like from a storytelling standpoint, it was maybe a little bit out of place or whatever, but it was just like, we're going to have this conversation with you, and this is why, and this is doing it. And I'm all in. Like, I'm completely on board with Dory. It's really interesting.
I like the tone, the bombastic tone, especially in the final page in which Odin is going to release the Destroyer on the new Thor to get his hammer back for his son. The position of his body, the way he's holding up one arm, the dialogue, the angle of the camera, it's just like, release the Destroyer, and his arm is up and he's grasping at the sky, and I just love that sort of.
He's grabbing his balls.
He is tickling a little bit.
But you know, if there's any book that you're able to do that in, it's this one.
Yeah.
So I like that grandiosity, that sort of melodrama. And then I have one last tiny point about this that I wanted to bring in. I'm noticing, not in everything, but in some books, since the movies, we're getting a different kind of drawing. This Jorge Molina drew this issue.
Yeah.
He was sort of a guest artist. And when you look at Thor in this, he looks like a human. Yes. And what I mean by that is he's not overly styled. Like, his body looks pretty anatomically correct if you're a really big
dude.
But
you're not suggesting that Chris Hemsworth is human and of human DNA and of a mortal man.
Those eyes?
Have you seen the eyes? Have you watched Rush?
Yeah.
Where basically we just look at his eyes.
I've watched Rush several times.
He's not a human, Josh. And don't think for a second he is.
Either way, I was appreciating the fact that they'd sort of, you know, they have a more realistic idealization of what he looks like. And I was like, wow, they're really drawing this book like that. And then I turn the page and I see like Culborse and God of Fear with his gigantic cartoony shoulders. And I was like, all right, it's fine. But I like that. I think it's a really neat direction, and it works sort of in contrast to this book.
So you know, everything is fantastic. They are bleeding in the movie stuff into the comic stuff.
I think there are some positive effects to the art.
Because with that, you get the costumes.
In this instance,
Does
the costume even matter?
You're never going to see those Hawkeye masks ever again.
No, but I mean, it's the same thing. Like, if you read the Hawkeye book, like, Clint Barton is built like a person in that book.
No, I get
that.
He's not
built like a... Go back and – well, that's the only thing I'm talking about.
Characters. I get that. Okay.
I'm not talking about all that. I'm just talking about the way that some of the characters are being drawn. And I like that style. I like how Michael Lark draws the characters as opposed to how Ed McGuinness draws the characters, basically, is what I'm saying.
So what you're saying is Steve Rogers has left to go direct movies? That's why he's not Captain America?
I thought he was like 100. I thought that was the problem. He's old. Now, I guess he's like Clint Eastwood.
I'm just going to assume that you are not even reading war stories. Because number five came out this week.
You know, I got to tell you, very seriously, I was like, I'm going to read war stories today. I'm going to make sure I get – and then it just got away from
me. Well, this is chapter 2 of 3 of the – and we talked about this last time.
The Israeli
– yeah. The Yom Kippur War, 1973. The Arab-Israeli War has many names. So it's in the non-World War II story. And this was actually really tense and really fantastic. I think one of the best issues of war stories in a while. A lot of it is because the art's really great and because he's been suffering from – poorer artists for a while, but this was the issue. So the last issue, we met a bunch of Israeli soldiers on the front line. None of them are professional soldiers. They're all conscripted in Israel eventually, and they all got jobs and families, and they're all doing their duty and waiting for this war they don't think will actually happen. And at the very end of the last issue, Syria attacked. And this issue is just one giant long tank battle. And not in the same way of tankies up close and bloody and personal. This was like a long-range tank battle in which all these Israeli tanks are up on a ridge and these dugout ramps with protection in front of them, and Syria is coming at them from below, so Israel has the high ground, and it's just a wave after wave of tanks coming at them. And I thought it was really tense, really interesting, the way that the crew reacted. These are not professional soldiers, so they start cracking under the pressure of days and days and days of tanks just coming at them. And especially for me, for a war I don't know a whole lot about, I find all of it really interesting to learn about.
Is it the Six Days War? Something like that?
It's 1973. It's called the Yom Kippur War and the Arab-Israeli War. And it's when Syria and Egypt, I believe, attacked Israel from two sides. And it's really interesting. Really great art in this one.
I was excited because I saw you put it on the list again, and I thought, oh, that means that it's good, because he's not going to just want to be like, you didn't read it, did you? And so I was like, I really want to read this in the last issue before, and I didn't make it.
You'll,
I don't know if
you'll
know.
Enjoy this. You can skip the first arc. The second arc is where
I have to shovel several times a day now, so that's been taking up a considerable amount of my time. There's a lot of snow removal.
Why else have kids unless you can put them to work?
They're not useful yet. The one of them, he doesn't walk. So right off, that's a disadvantage when it comes to snow removal. And the other one just complains too much to make it worth it.
So this is appropriate. This is the Valentine's Day episode. We have Harley Quinn, Valentine's Day Special number 1. And I find this book interesting, not just because it's enduringly popular, which is not to say it's bad. It's just so unusual. And actually, we're going to talk about DC's announcement that happened last week soon, but this book is kind of like a farce. It's completely over the top. It's silly. It doesn't connect at all to the rest of the DCU, and it's not a Harley Quinn you'll recognize from any other place. She's maybe close to the animated series, but not even like that. And then we made the joke before, this is Harley Quinn Landlord, which is really the name of the series, but it's just so silly, and I find it really interesting that DC allows this to happen and that it's so popular. But
who allowed this to happen?
In this issue, and I don't mean that in a bad way, I just, historically speaking, in this issue, Harley Quinn sees that there's going to be a bachelor auction for a date with Bruce Wayne, and she decides, since Bruce Wayne has a animal shelter he's opening, he's a pet lover, and she's a pet lover, so she finds him even more attractive, so she needs to get a lot of money together to win that auction. And so hijinks ensue. And there's a couple of criminals in here who are inept. The Carp and Sea Robin or something. They're trying to save all the sea life, running against the animal lovers. And there's a lot of Jimmy Palmiotti's animal politics in here, which I'm fine with. But it's really kind of interesting.
What are Jimmy Palmiotti's animal politics?
He's very much saving all the animals, which is great, obviously. Right. But so there's a lot of that in here. But it's silly because they keep – in this issue, it's a lot of fourth wall breaking. Every time Harley Quinn falls asleep, we cut to a dream sequence by a different artist. A lot of it involves being married to Bruce Wayne. And then at one point, Bruce Wayne gets knocked out, so we go to his dream. in which he's married to Harley Quinn, but it's a nightmare. And it's fun. It's silly. The arts are written. This is really good. And it's just very unusual. Like Harley Quinn's always bashing people with giant mallets, and then you see them later on with their heads just lying in a pool of blood, and it's just never mentioned again. It's just it's bizarre, the tone of this book. It's fun, though.
It's very unlike what DC. I mean, all of the things that you use non-continuity, just kind of farcical, just sort of going
with
it.
This kind of feels like, and again, we're going to talk about this in a few minutes, the way DC's going to go. Well, at least what they say they're going to do, whether or not they actually do it, but sort of the non-continuity, just tell fun stories route. Because mm-hmm. this is not at all, does not at all fit in what else is going on. But it's great. It's fun.
Cool.
And I wanted to mention Astro City 20 because we talked about 18, and 18 was the first part of this arc in which we meet characters on the downslope of their career. If you recall, Josh, we really liked that.
Yes.
We saw those characters who didn't have powers dealing with getting older and slower and taking longer to heal.
This has been. I was like, oh, it's another one. I was like, oh, this is gonna be like a long arc, which historically in Astro City have not been very, well, not historically, but in the last decade or so have not been good.
We had a good one with the Trinity arc earlier with the three main characters. Anyway, I didn't really love the last issue, 19, which delves into the past of one of the characters. Cause I didn't really care about her past. I found the story of them falling apart as older heroes interesting, and we're back to that in full force in this issue, in which we see how this female character's name, I can't remember, how she dealt with getting older and slower and not being as fast in the battlefield, and you know what that meant for her life, and then her boyfriend in the same way is on this never-ending quest to find a serum that will make him younger and faster, and the consequences of that. And I really just found all of this really interesting and entertaining.
It's been great. Like, it's one of those things like, oh, it's this story again. Cool.
Yeah.
Like, I was just happy that we're still going with it. I'm 100% on board.
I really liked the examination of the relationship that she had with MPH, with his name, which is also the name of an image book. About how
so there's a lot of characters in this book, so I don't think you can blame anybody.
She never had time for any of the regular relationship things like breakfast in bed or remembering birthdays because she's constantly training because she doesn't have superpowers, unlike him. And she was constantly getting up super early and falling asleep really early. And I liked seeing that aspect of superheroing. Like, what happens when you're into your 40s, you've been doing this for 20 years, what does that do to your body and your stamina? And it was good. It was really good.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm ready for more. I can totally go with that. So I wanted to touch on Darth Vader number one real quick. I'm of a couple of minds on this.
I'm really interested to see what you think of Darth Vader number one, because we have spent many, many, many minutes on our angst over Star Wars.
Well, right away, there was that thing that we've talked about in the other books, which is them dropping breadcrumbs to be like, right? It's like the movie, right?
Right.
Which I don't like. But I know why they do it, and it's almost forgivable in that way because a lot of people do, and they want that, I guess. I don't know if they like it because it's obvious. However, I felt that a lot of what we were complaining about before was that it was like, I guess when you have Luke and Vader together, like what we've seen should be what there is. But this to me was a little more behind the scenes, and it was like, I don't think I've ever thought of the further adventures of Darth Vader
mm-hmm.
and of him going to hang out and talk to Jabba. Like, I found myself interested despite myself, I suppose, is what I would say about this.
Well, the only thing with so the problem we had with last issue of Star Wars was that it really messed with some of the emotional beats of the films. But I thought similarly here when Vader, and this is very much very ties into the Star Wars series. We got flashbacks to that. But I thought when he recognized,
I was
going to
say I didn't know they were all working together.
Yeah,
yeah. I didn't know that all the stories were going to be connected with each other in sort of a little mini universe kind of thing. Even time-wise.
Well, it's Marvel.
Like, as we're reading those, it's happening. I know, but I'm fine with that. That's kind of cool. I like that. I like that coordination.
You're saying the lightsaber bit, it sort of reinforces mm-hmm. that thing where he knows who these people are now.
Well, which, I mean, here's the deal.
Although,
that,
if you think about it, in Empire, he's after the Skywalker boy, so he must have figured it out at some point.
Yeah, Right, exactly. So my point here is that this works because this is, to me, because this is filling in blanks of things that were filled in that time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's got to be – he must have found out who Luke was over the course of between those two movies, and it may have, this is how – and if he employs Boba Fett, I was like, yeah, that, you know what? That makes sense. It works. It makes sense. I like that. I liked watching the Emperor and Darth Vader interact more and see how their relationship actually might work.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've never seen that, and it made sense, and it was kind of like, that's fucked up. And I loved that the story is going to be that Darth Vader has to work for Taggy. I don't know how to say it. I was like, they showed him, and I was like, oh, that's awesome, because I love Imperial officers from the first movie, especially.
Right.
I was completely on board with that bit.
So he's been demoted again, Darth Vader.
Yeah. You know, Salvador LaRocca can draw all sorts of things, but I don't need him to draw anybody's face.
He can draw a great Darth Vader and a great Jabba.
And a good Boba Fett, but stop drawing faces.
Well, there was a lot of DVD lightboxing in this. A lot.
The Emperor was painful.
And I think the coloring didn't help either. It was It made everyone look like they had waxy skin. But there was a lot of DVD capture in this.
Yeah, there was, and I don't like that. When I say the Emperor or you look at him, do you hear like that moaning music in the background of your head?
Oh,
I hear good.
There was you know what, Kieran, you gotta give Kieran Gillen credit. He had a couple of like sort of snotty responses.
Well, that's the perfect kind of character for him to write.
Oh, I know, I love it. It was like, oh, I'm afraid that it will be, Lord. He's a little sarcastic. I love sarcastic Palpatine. It's one of my favorite things.
Well, the idea of Vader being demoted again because of his failure at the Death Star battle to have to work for the jerk from the first Death Star is going to be fun, I think. I'm willing to give this book a longer leash than Star Wars, I think.
I kind of am, too. And the other thing is, like, I didn't really care. I didn't want to read it. I wasn't interested in it.
Here's the thing,
but I'm
though.
A little interested in it.
Couldn't, instead of the Wookiee bounty hunter, we had Bosk?
No, they don't work together.
I just want to see Bosk.
Well, listen, there's room for Trandoshans everywhere, but just not now.
This was fun, though. This was more fun. I mean, a couple of things, wincing things aside, I thought this was much...
No, totally. It had those wincing things, but at the end of it, I was like, all right, you know what? I came out of that enjoying it more than I... Well, and, you know, it is really interesting to see what they're going to do with these, because they matter in a way.
Do you have it in front of you?
Know. Yeah.
Look at... Swipe through to the cover for the next issue. It's going to make you laugh.
It's... yeah, no, I did. I saw. I know what you're talking about. You know, I didn't even have to get there. I don't know how to pronounce that guy's name.
I don't either.
And it bothers me because I keep wanting to say Mahdi, but it's not Mahdi.
No, Mahdi was already. They mentioned Mahdi.
It's Tag, but I don't know how you say it. It's T-A-G-G-E.
Yeah. We'll just call him Tag. Because Tags make him sound even more like a dick. Like an 80s villain.
He's got the sideburns. And, you know,
And Vader's and doing the Vader's strut kind of, back past him. Apparently,
he's like a little.
He's doing a Vader strut apparently in front of a giant fan. And
who's J.G. Jones?
Tag is scowling.
Who's drawing these?
I don't know who's doing the covers. But
cover
artist,
Granoff. Adi okay.
Granoff. Yeah, good stuff. Really fun.
It's good. Yeah. I like the design of them.
So
I can't help it.
It's fun. Go to ifanboy.com/Amazon. That's how you can help us keep the show on the air. That's where you go to find a link to Amazon. You make your purchase. We get a piece of that action. No one gets harmed in the process. No animals are harmed in the making of this movie. And we really appreciate everyone who does that, as well as ifanboy.com/registration, where for $3 a month or $30 a year, you can help the show out directly by becoming an iFanboy member. And we appreciate everyone who does that, including people who let us know on Twitter that they've done it. I really like to see when people do that. And we appreciate everyone who helps us out or any podcast that they listen to. And those were the books we're going to talk about this week. We talked about a little bit fewer than normal, not a ton fewer, but we wanted to get to some of the other stuff. Plus, it wasn't not a lot of books this week.
We were going to do less, but there were really things to talk about, so it was hard to. So, yes. You know, we're trying to.
So, really quickly, this was funny. Josh and I last week were excited. We're excited anytime we can get the show done early and not have to screw up our social or family lives to get the show done. So, we found time last week.
About to Greg, okay.
To do the show on Thursday, And we woke up Friday morning to find that DC had instigated another mini reboot of sorts. And everyone was like, oh, I can't wait to hear what you have to say about it. And we were like, well, you're going to have to wait another week because we did the show already. So what happened while we were sleeping, Josh, was that DC announced a whole slew of new books and a whole bunch of unique and interesting characters getting books, a whole bunch of unique and interesting creators doing those books. Some, for sure, some mainstays, absolutely. But also, apparently, from Dan DiDio, an interview with Dan DiDio, a mandate to not worry about continuity so much as worry about telling good stories. And this is being called in some circles the Batgirlization of DC, in which books like Batgirl and, as we mentioned, Harley Quinn, which have both been very popular, have not really been worried about so much the bigger tapestry of DC and not worried so much about looking like a book from the 90s and just told good stories and have proved to be successful. So we're seeing a lot more of that in this list. At least it's in the list. We don't know until these books actually come out what they're going to be like, but that's what we're told is going to happen. So what did you think of what happened?
Well, I've got this list here in front of me, and basically it's the title of the book, the writer, and the artist is what it looks like. And I find myself gravitating to look at the names to see who's drawing or who's writing and drawing stuff. And there's, I mean, you could say it's a change, but there are a lot of the usual gang.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I feel like 60-70% of it are, you know, the folks that we're used to see. There's a lot of Scott Lobdell, Dan Jurgens.
I don't know if it's 60%.
All right, maybe Paul Levitz, Scott Lobdell, and Keith Giffen. There's a lot of the same, and which is fine. I don't want them to fire everybody who has a job.
Right.
But as you go through this, there are some bright spots that I think are kind of interesting. To me, the first thing that stood out, the thing that made me very excited, was Section 8 by Garth Ennis and John McCrae, the Hitman team. And I think Section 8, I haven't read Hitman in so long.
I believe
but I think
it takes
those
place.
Are characters.
Yeah, I think it's Hitman.
Yeah,
characters.
Those are characters from like Bueno Excelente and the Defenestrator and these sort of characters. Bueno Excelente was my desktop for years, and it's just him like going, ooh, bueno. You'll have to look that up, but you can't because they won't sell the trades.
Well, they sell the Hitman trades. They put new ones out a couple years ago.
They didn't finish. Like I had like half of them, and then they stopped doing them.
Well, I must not have sold. I remember.
And then they were
going
to do them again.
Five.
Right, but then they stopped. So like we didn't get to read the whole story. And I still can't. It's not on the I don't think it's on the, because I look on the apps every once in a while. I want to read the rest of it, but I can't.
Right. That's a really great superhero story. People should go back and look for those Hitman.
Martian Manhunter by Rob Williams and Ben Oliver. That's kind of cool because Rob Williams did the Royals Masters of War series that we both like so much.
But also because
that's neat.
I think that's a character that really got the short end of the stick in the reboot.
Absolutely.
And it was such a mainstay in the universe beforehand and became basically irrelevant with the reboot. And so that's good to see. I'm curious what you think of Constantine the Hellblazer by Ming Doyle and newcomer Riley Rossmo.
First of all, I did notice that. First thing I noticed in the press release was newcomer Riley Rossmo. I was like, but
he's been doing books since we've been doing this show, as long as we're doing this show.
I remember I had a quote on the back of his book way before I had children. And I've had children for a while. So like do creator owned books not count? Or is newcomer to DC? I guess you could get away with that. It's now called Constantine the Hellblazer.
We're sneaking back in, Josh.
Yeah, I mean, like, it does feel a little bit like I told you that was not going to work. but at the same time, I am totally of the mind, like, I'm really down with British people writing Hellblazer, and I like it that way. But who knows? But there's a lot of artists writing in this, like a ton. Ming Doyle.
Yeah.
You think of her primarily as an artist.
Pat Gleason.
What's the other one down here? Pat Gleason is another one. Brian Hitch. Brian Hitch wrote and drew a miniseries for Image not long ago.
Yes.
I can't say that made me excited for Justice League of America.
Well, you're only going to get two issues.
I feel like. Yeah, I know. I feel like there are some missteps. We have Tom King on Omega Men, kind of cool. A Prez series.
Well, the fact is, there's a lot of excitement for these books, and a lot of people applauding DC for trying a lot of interesting characters in the lead role and new creators. But the fact of the matter is, historically speaking, the audience and the market has not been very receptive to these kind of books. And I think a good portion of them are going to die a swift death.
Well, I mean,
and
if
I don't
you remember,
want them to. I just that's what I just think looking at this history of the, of these things. What happened to half of, you know, when the DC reboot happened? All those genre, quote unquote genre books, the ones that weren't superhero stories, you know, were gone by the first year.
True, but the other side of that was, you know, I have heard, I don't know that it's like a big, like a lot of them were edited to death.
That's true.
So those interesting creators that were brought on to do a thing that was interesting were just henpecked, and they were like a bunch of them were gone. Or had just given up, you know, so the books had no chance, you know, very quickly. If you think about, I think it was Blackhawks, and then, well, there was a couple of other books like that that just never got off the ground in the first place. I think there was, see, it's been long enough now that I don't quite remember. Voodoo, you know, it was changed right away. There was a bunch of things that just were never given a chance to fly. So my question, are they going to let these people do books? Now, before, that was all like they were trying to be super cohesive and everything was the same. And, you know, and if this is more, you know, do your own book, that's going to be a whole different thing.
And we kind of have a Batgirl spinoff in Black Canary, which one of the co-writers of Batgirl is writing that. And Black Canary is a supporting character in that book anyway. So that's interesting. It is interesting to see that they have responded to some of the things that have been going on and not just dug their heels in for another 3 years. But I'm
at the same time, I mean, like, you know, Paul Levitt, Scott Lobdell.
Look, a lot of these I'm not going to read. This is not going to be like the new reboot where we read them all. Although that was fun, but I'm not going to do that this time.
I just made air quotes.
It was fun. We had a good time.
It was.
Those shows where we did all the books that came out were super fun. Ratings. But
okay.
But I'm not going
to. Not reading them.
Not going to read all these.
So much monologue. So much first-person monologue.
The thing is, I literally just finished reading Superman, that first issue, so I feel like I could start again. Mm-hmm. I feel pretty good about it. So the other big news that happened this week was that, as was alluded to in the leaked Sony emails that came out a few months ago, Sony and Marvel Studios came to a deal on Spider-Man, which was really interesting, or using the character Spider-Man. So Sony still contains the rights, but Marvel gets to use Spider-Man in their movies and then act as producers on the solo Spider-Man films that Sony has, but Sony doesn't pay them, which is interesting. No one pays anybody, but they just get to use the characters.
That doesn't seem to make sense.
I think, well, there's apparently a elevator clause in that if the Spider-Man movie makes a certain amount of money, Marvel Studios get some money, but really it's just about Marvel getting to use Spider-Man in their Avengers movies and then producing those Spider-Man films for Sony. And that's really what it's about. And it's really interesting to me because, Josh, you'll know this, that, you know, for years we've talked to people at Marvel and you can go back many, many years and they said, we are never getting Spider-Man. We were told that by quite a few people at Marvel that we were told there's no hope. We have a whole legal team that's constantly working on it, but there's just no way to crack the Sony deal. And they were going to focus on, and this is talking about the movie side, they were going to focus on other younger characters to try to create a new Spider-Man, but we all knew that was foolhardy because you can't really make a new Spider-Man. There's only one Spider-Man. Well, two. And but so this was really interesting. They finally came in, and really this is the failure of Sony to make a, you know, successful Spider-Man series really brought them to desperate straits, clearly. And I thought it was really interesting news. I'm looking forward to seeing Spider-Man done by the Marvel team.
Yeah.
I know this is so exciting for you, but I'm interested to see, especially since they're going to go younger with him and not just like...
Are they going
to
do Miles Morales, though?
No, they're definitely not.
No, you think definitely not.
I know definitely not. Okay. I know. I've talked to people. They're definitely doing Peter Parker, but... They're also doing a younger. They're not doing like 25-year-old playing 16-year-old. They're going to cast a young actor and have it. See what I find interesting is that you don't have that character in the Marvel movie universe, and that will be interesting to see a kid playing off of Tony Stark, which is already seen in Iron Man 3 with two great comic effect.
I think that works really well because, like, you know, Spider-Man popped up and he's, you know, surrounded by giants basically, and that's interesting. You know, he's on his own in the other movies.
Right.
You know, there's superpower bad guys, but there's not a culture of superheroes. So that's kind of interesting. I don't know. I mean, I guess it'll be fine. Like, I honestly, my thing is, I think you can start to lose a sense of cohesiveness to a story when you're constantly like adding elements and trying to put too many things in, which was actually, I think, the Spider-Man movies did wrong.
Well,
they kept putting more things.
The thing is, and this is jumping way many years ahead, but you know, they're cycling out the first wave of characters here. So they have to bring in a bunch of new ones to sustain the Avengers franchise.
Right.
You know, so you're going to be getting a Avengers team eventually. That's Doctor Strange and Ant-Man and Spider-Man and Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver. That's what's going to happen.
I can't wait for like 20 years from now when we have like the Gilgamesh years. It was like the 80s of
Dr. Druid.
Like, we need Moon.
Black Knight.
Moon Dragon. Just something.
That'll be awesome. Those books were awesome. So those were two bits of interesting and big news. We're going to get Spider-Man casting news fairly soon. They're starting shooting the movie in 2 months that he's in. So they got to get that character locked down. If anything, they've got to get him, make him a suit that fits. So really interesting to keep your eye on DC and Marvel Studios coming up. So now, Josh, let's put
yes.
our relationship expert hats on and answer yeah. some romance audience questions. So these questions we solicited from the audience that were not necessarily comic related, though they could be. Most are not. From people who have relationship questions. And just a disclaimer, once again, we have no expertise in this area other than our own dating and romantic histories. We have no degrees. We have no training. Just a good heart and a yearn to help.
I've watched a lot of movies.
Watch a lot of romantic comedies, so I'm going to go for a lot of advice that goes for big gestures.
Yeah.
You know, show up to her place of work in a costume or something.
What I know is that at the end, it's pretty much going to work out.
Yeah, no matter
what
you
do. And the girl is going to be much, much more attractive than the male. That's what I've learned unrealistically.
So you want to start us off with Darren from London, Josh?
Yeah. Darren writes in, so I just moved into a flat in Putney with my girlfriend. He's English. The first time I've ever done this with a girl, and it's been amazing. Now, she has no problem with me reading comics every week or having graphic novels on our bookshelf. It's my passion, and she appreciates that. However, he's got exclamation points here. I'm just trying to do him justice. I cannot get her into comics. She's a writer and a huge lover of prose books, so for her, she would rather see fictional world through her own imagination and interoperation rather than a writer and artist showing her how they think it's supposed to be. She read one of my favorite artistic works in any medium, Day Tripper, and was less than enthusiastic about it. So my question to you is this. Is it a hopeless cause to try to convince her of the value of the medium, or is there a comic or graphic novel that could work to change her mind? I've spent time thinking about this at least a good 4 to 6 hours a day.
There's your problem
kinda
right there.
Weak sauce. There's your problem right there. She's I don't know what to do with this information. She's Czech.
Well, it's long known the Czech hate comics.
They don't like comics, the Czechs. That was what their problem with Slovakia was.
Yeah, exactly.
Slovakians love comics. Czechs
hated them.
Like,
no
yeah.
good. They're like, we can take or leave it.
She loves good children's literature. Neil Gaiman, books like Gone Girl.
Well, there's
your problem
flag,
right there.
Red flag.
Pride and Prejudice. Anything by Milan Kundera. Oh, I made it through a Milan Kundera book once. Good God. She loves Downton Abbey. And Sherlock. Sherlock is pretty basically a comic book. Like I said, she respects that I love comics. She got me Jack Kirby Marvel slippers for Christmas.
Awesome.
Well on, mate. And I just want to show her what makes comics just as amazing as any book, film, show, or any art form. All right, right off, Darren, we're with you.
We were absolutely right about
the power and validity of the medium of comic books.
Yes.
On that last bit, totally. And you can try to show her. I'm ready. I'm going to trot out a lame metaphor. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink.
Right. You can't force someone to like something they're not going to like. It's judging by many of the emails we received, it's half the battle. She is awesome, excited that you're into it and gets you these presents that are related to it. Many guys who wrote in are going to be jealous of that. So that's cool. But you can't force your interest on anyone. You can say, hey, check this out. And if they don't like it, then that's fine. But, you know, you can't make them like it.
You guys, you guys all like the animated, like, DC things.
Right.
And I don't really like them. I don't care. I mean, like, I'm fine that you guys like them. I can see why, and that I, you know, appreciate that and everything, but I just can't. I just don't. I can't be bothered. I think that's a little like that. And you kind of have to be like, okay, you like your thing. I like my thing. You know, it's fine. She doesn't have to. Just doesn't have to move her the way it moves you.
And I get the cool. I get the yearning to share what you love with a person that you love. That's natural. But eventually, they may not work.
You'll get over that.
Yeah, I mean. Have your thing. She's got her. I'm sure there's things she's into that you're not, right? I'm
like,
sure.
Like Milan Kundera, for example.
Or
like when they say that the lightness of being is unbearable, they're not kidding. It is unbearable.
So
that's not the.
Darren, I know this is probably not the advice you want to hear. I mean, look, if you really want to give it one last shot, which I'm totally fine with you taking. Once again, the grand gesture, as we've been told for years in the movies, always wins. So here's your last Hail Mary shot is you got to hit her with some Neil Gaiman comics. If she likes
that
Neil
would
Gaiman,
seem to make the most sense.
If she likes Neil Gaiman.
If she's into literature, then Sandman seems to be the thing you'd want to try.
Although Sandman can be very hit or miss with Neil Gaiman fans, which seems strange, but it's been so long that most people don't, you know, seem to know him from later works. Because I know a bunch of people who like his books that have been reading Sandman and to a very mixed reaction.
But it's still that theme of the god who doesn't want to be a god.
Oh, absolutely. I would 100% try Sandman on her. And if that doesn't work, then enjoy the fact that she likes other cool things and gives you Jack Kirby slippers for Christmas. You know?
I don't even know where you get Jack Kirby slippers.
And I would just sleep with one eye open. There's the whole Gone Girl thing.
It is distressing. Yeah, that's true. It's a good point.
So let's try Andrew, who says, I have a female friend that I'm becoming attracted to the more I get to know her. I have no idea how she feels about me in this sense. Both of us have recently ended serious relationships, too. I've always thought it would be nice to have a close friendship with someone before becoming romantically involved. I believe that a prior friendship will likely strengthen a potential future relationship, but you risk the chance of either person finding someone else. What do you think of my theory, and what is your experience with friends you've become attracted to? Maybe it's relevant to know that I'm 24 as well. This is another romantic comedy trope. So, Andrew, movies say go for it. Take off your glasses, shake out your hair, go from nerd to hottie.
No,
that's not real?
Get a boombox.
Find
a lawn.
This is very tricky, Andrew, for you, because...
Hold it up.
This is a potential blow up in your face, and you'll lose a friendship if that happens. No, you don't necessarily lose it. Depends on how it blows up in your face. But it could taint.
If you don't want, but the thing is, if you're at the point where you don't want it to be a friendship, you've already lost friendship. That's my feeling. And so it's not really the thing that she thinks it is anyway. And the only thing you're doing is delaying the inevitable, where it's going to fizzle out, or you're going to get resentful, or she's going to end up with somebody else, and you'll always have this thing like, wow, what if I should have done? If you feel like you want to be a thing, you gotta step up to it.
Right.
Well, I think, you know, and it's going to change things, and it's totally a risk, but it doesn't matter. As far as you're concerned, that horse is out of the barn. That's what I think.
Yeah.
I also think you're 24, so it doesn't really matter.
It's interesting that there was a study a little while back that like 7 out of 8 men will develop feelings for a female friend, but like the other way, it was like real low.
So yeah. Totally.
I think it's like 1 out of 8 women, but
yeah. Let's define feelings though.
Right.
I mean, like, does it mean like, wow, I really think I could be with her? Or just like the more I'm around her, like, I really want to see her naked. I don't know.
I was in a actually similar situation to Andrew. Not when I was 24, but I was 22. So close enough. Where I had a friend at work that I was attracted to. She became single suddenly, and I pounced. Not literally, obviously. We ended up dating, but then because she just got out of a really serious relationship, it didn't work out because she was still all mixed up inside about who she, you know, her feelings.
I've had that happen when
so
I was.
So that's
20.
The risk you take of dealing with someone who just got out of a serious relationship. They're often very. Have feeling a lot of emotional turmoil from what they've just been through. You know, should I have broken up? Should I not have broken up? I don't know her situation. Maybe it was pretty definitive, but that's also risky. You risk being the rebound relationship.
I think you make an excellent point there. I mean, like a seriously excellent point, given that. So let me revise, I guess. You should just, for right now, just hang out with her. If anything's going to happen, it's going to happen.
You can start doing activities just the two of you. And
yeah, that's
how
what I'm saying.
Goes. Like, and I don't know if you're part of a group or what, but, you know, go to dinner or a movie or something that's date-like activities and just see how it goes.
Yeah.
You know?
And just be cool. Keep it casual. You know? I think that's the way to go, but...
God, you're 24.
I mean, once you're interested, you're interested.
Oh, to be 24. Mostly I want a 24-year-old.
On my back.
I want a 24-year-old back is what I want. Why don't you pick the next one?
I picked this one because I don't know how to answer it.
Okay.
So this is the one that made me feel the oldest.
Okay.
Okay. Paul from Minnesota writes in and says, "Hey guys, I got a relationship question. If you're dating a girl and the main form of communication is texting, how quickly should you expect a response to a text? I cannot understand." And then we would go up to the corner store on weekend and ask for an ice cream cone. Sorry. I can understand if it takes a few hours to get back from somebody, but if it goes a week or more waiting for a reply, can you safely assume that the relationship is over and she isn't really interested? Yes. I recently had this happen during the holidays when a girl I was, quote, really swamped with work, and text just stopped coming. Needless to say, it was over by New Year's. Would be interested to hear your thoughts.
Well,
Connor, do you have any say on this?
I got a couple of things. First of all,
I mean,
you know the answer, Paul. You didn't get a response for a week or more, and then the relationship ended. So I don't care how busy someone is. If you're involved with someone, and you don't hear from each other for a week. That is generally a good sign that the relationship is coming to a halt. Even without texting, if it's calling or seeing each other and it goes a week and you don't communicate, that's generally a bad sign.
And the text is really a low-impact effort.
Oh, God, it's so easy to do. It's just shoot out a text. But I don't know how people date now.
Oh, you've changed.
No, I mean, I know people who primarily communicate via forms that don't involve talking is bizarre to me. Like, I get texting. I do it all the time. I'm constantly texting people. I get it. I'm not, you know, out of that, but...
You know, I'm hip. I'm with it. I'm
but,
cool.
Like, when I, you know, was out and dating actively, I was texting people, but also calling them and also emailing them and also seeing them.
Face-to-face.
Face-to-face, primarily. That's what the point is, right? I mean...
Yes.
So, I don't think... You know, this is me being 37 and saying, if you're in a relationship and the primary form of communication is texting, that might be a problem too. But then again, that might be just how people date now, and that's why we are an emotionally stunted society.
I think maybe, I feel like if you're in something that you're going to call a relationship, then that cannot be the primary form of communication.
Yeah, but the thing is, people, my sisters, they don't talk on the phone. No one talks on the phone.
No, but like you have to, like, if you're not seeing them, and spending time with them, and the only thing you're doing is sending little short misspelled notes back and forth.
Or dick
pics. Can you call that a relationship? I guess that is a relationship of a kind,
right,
in the broad sense of that word.
I think the biggest, go ahead.
Are these texts, are they sexts? Because that's a whole, I don't know how to deal with that, is basically what I'm saying.
Well, the big.
But if you're just chatting through that, I don't know, like, are you missing anything at that point if she goes away?
The bigger thing for me is people in a relationship want to talk to each other and spend time together. So if you're not hearing from someone for a week at a time, then you're in trouble, no matter what the form of communication is. And I actually had this situation happen to me where somebody I was seeing, and then the communication got less and less, and then finally I didn't hear from them for a week. So I was, you know, like, well, I guess that's it. You know, that's pretty much it at that point.
But at that point, wasn't that more due to the fact that your iPad needed new parts and they don't make them anymore, so you couldn't get back to them?
Get them on eBay.
Yeah, and they were like shipped from
Russia.
They came
from Slovakia.
They love comics.
And they had a comic and an iPad part. Everything you get from eBay and from Slovakia has a comic in it. Little known fact.
Yeah. They love it. They love comics like Belgians love waffles.
Right. So Paul, yes, if you're in a relationship with someone, primarily you're texting each other and you don't get to hear from them from many to many days. Hours, look, hours. People have jobs.
Hours. Totally.
Hours is totally
you
fine.
You see a text sometimes and you can't do anything with it right there. You don't know the answer and you just put the phone away and you forget it's there. That's fair game.
Also, people have to work. I mean, you can't be on your phone while you're working. She clearly has a job. She says she's busy at work.
Yeah.
So
fair enough.
Human Paul, Josh, do you remember the first text message you got?
No.
I do. Oh, simply because no. I remember seeing some weird blinking thing on my. It was a flip phone for sure, and not knowing what it was and ignoring it for a couple of days, and then finally going, "What is this?" Opening it up and seeing a message in there and not being very confused.
I do remember being in a hotel room at a convention, and it was like we were sleeping, and it was like 2 or 3 in the morning, and you were sleeping, and then Ron was in. There was several people there.
Was it the year we had 9 people in the room?
Maybe. And then like at like 2 or 3 in the morning – no, not that one. At 2 or 3 in the morning or something like that, I just kept hearing a beep. And it drove me fucking insane. And like I got up and I was looking for the fire alarm and the smoke alarm and everything. And then like I finally – I don't remember if it was until the morning. Like it was your phone.
Was it mine?
And you had gotten – yes, it was your phone specifically and you had gotten a text. But like it didn't wake anybody up, but I didn't know what it was to stop it. But like your phone was like under something or hidden, so I couldn't locate the sound of the beep. And that was before I was – doing any sort of texting, because I remember like I had a flip phone and I was like, this is typing on this is stupid, and I think it costs me like 35 cents every time somebody sends me one, so I don't want to do that.
This has been old man theater.
I know. No, that's a real story. That's my
it sounds familiar still.
Yeah,
old man theater. Nick from Philadelphia. I've got a half relationship, half financial question. Listen, you don't want financial advice from either one of us. Just that's my caveat to this question.
Don't buy a house.
A few months back, I proposed to my girlfriend of 5 years, and she said yes. We're both very excited to be married and go into the next stage of our lives. The issue is, what do we do about paying for a wedding? We're both employed and make a decent living though she recently switched to a dream job for a much lower pay. Also, because of family stuff, the good old-fashioned pigheadedness, we wouldn't want any money from our parents. We ran some quick numbers and were able to make a wedding cost about $10,000. Side note, my brother and his fiance recently moved back home for a year to pay for their upcoming $60,000 wedding. This price includes everything we'd want and everything we would want at our wedding before the cutbacks make the event no longer worth it to us. This is a lot of money and we could be spending on any number of things, house, future kid, vacations, that issue of New Mutants with the first appearance of Deadpool, etc. Plus, we don't have this money on hand, so we have to either save up for a couple years or take out a loan. So this is the crux of the question. Do we skip a wedding entirely and just do a courthouse marriage with a nice dinner for our families? Will she or I regret not making a big special day out of it? I'm leaning towards the courthouse option, worried about I'm pushing her into doing something she'll resent later. Is $10,000 worth a day of dancing to Super Bass with all of our drunk friends? Yes, that's but there bass. Are other factors. Super Bass, sorry. What do you think, Josh? You're the only
one. That's the oldest thing that either of us have done so far.
You're the only one who's married on this show. So what do you think?
All right.
Do you wish you'd spent your money on something else? Your wedding money?
I didn't pay for my wedding, which is key.
Well, there you go.
Paid for my honeymoon. Okay.
Oh, that's right. Her dad paid, right?
I wasn't going to get that specific to all of the people listening.
A, he's not listening. B, she's not listening.
Yeah, that's true. She's never listened, so it's not really an issue.
I remember, I remember it was your dad because I remember driving up the champagne bill.
Yeah. What do you have against him? had that not been an issue at the time, I would have never wanted to spend a significant amount of money on a party that was happening on one day. Mm-hmm. It seems like a wildly irresponsible decision. And I say this, my wife makes a living as a wedding photographer. And she's not cheap. Wedding photographers aren't cheap in general. There is something about it, though, that I found extremely valuable. I loved my wedding. I loved my wedding day. It was a really wonderful day for, you know, before my kids came along, I probably said, like, that was the best day of my life. That was, like, a really wonderful thing. I had you know, all my family and my friends at one table, and then her family at nine tables. I don't like people.
You had two tables. But you had your family at one table, and you had your friends at another table.
I know. And so that was like, it was good, but like, you're starting out your life. You want, like, don't go into debt for it. That's a terrible idea. I'll go all Susie Orman on you, or a loan. Don't do that. I suppose you could save up for a while, but honestly, have a cheap party to celebrate with a bunch of people and get people together for it. Then, you know, travel, go do things. If you're going to have kids someday, like, go do other things while you can. And I think the money is better spent and creates better memories with that. I honestly believe that. If you can do it and it's not a hassle, then totally do it. It's great. If you can't, you know, spend that money on something that's a little more experiential. And if she's down with that, because, you know, a lot of people are bought into, you know, like, this is the goal. You want to be at a wedding and look like this, and that's the thing. I'd say run with it. That is what I would say.
I'm going through this now with my sister, who's getting married later this year, and I'm watching all this happen from afar, and sometimes not from afar, involving my own wallet, helping out. But it's just insane how much all this stuff costs. And I'm not saying you shouldn't get married. I wonder if we have spiraled out of control. And again, not wanting to take Lindsay's livelihood away, but I think we're spiraling out of control with what we are demanding of weddings now.
Well, here's what I would tell you about photographers. If you are going to do it, hire a good photographer, because you're only going to take two things away from that
day.
Pictures
are worth all the difference.
It's going to be the photos, and it's going to be like the wedding rings. And that's it. That's all you're going to have. So if you're going to really do it and spend all the money, then you may as well have a really good record.
Those flowers will die. The photos.
Yes, they will.
And
those kind of costs add up really fast.
Yeah.
$10,000 sounds like a bargain.
$10,000 is super cheap. Where does he live?
But even that, I mean,
that's too.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I know you're in a city, and that's a problem.
Yeah, but I'm surprised he's able to go that cheap in a city.
Then just get a barn outside of town.
Well, Nick, it's tough. I think you and your fiance need to look inside how important is having the wedding to us versus, you know, having a down payment for a house or something like that.
Or like a trip to other places in the world. Leave the country. Go see Europe. Go see Japan, Africa, something
else.
Our
friend Jeff Cannata, he didn't have a wedding. He spent that money and he got married in Italy and did a whole long Italy honeymoon. I mean, just depends on what
he's older.
But what do you value more is the question.
Here's a modern day addition to that. There was a time that people didn't get together with their families all that often. And those were the kinds of things where you saw them, whether it was bar mitzvahs or weddings or whatever, because people who were disparate, you know, they would talk on the phone, everyone's going to send letters or whatever. With social media, that seems to become much less pressing. You
right.
kind of know what's going on with everybody, what they look like. You know, you have your interactions with them. And I know that it's virtual, but it really takes up a lot of that fascinating, like, oh my God, Aunt Ginny, I haven't seen you. Like, it's... So that aspect of it doesn't seem to be as important, you know, and in that way, maybe that party isn't as necessary.
The point is, Josh is making is he regrets having his wedding.
I don't.
I'm going to tell Lindsay.
I look like I was
episode.
Eight.
You do.
Yep.
Let's wrap up with Joe's email. Joe says,
Joe,
for all my 20s, I was used to being an independent guy. I didn't take relationships too seriously. The two or three big ones that I had fizzled out for that reason. Now I've been in a great relationship for a few years with a girl I'm very serious about. It took me about a year to get past some of my bachelor habits. I bought collectibles when I wanted to, went out with my boys whenever, didn't always call when I was busy. I wasn't a bad guy, but I was focused on having more on having fun than being predictable. These days I've learned that relationships can take compromise and adjustment of priorities. Here's the problem. Whenever we talk about the first year, I guess the first year of dating, or when we hear about other people in similar situations, my lady goes off on how awful I was and how ashamed I should be, and she wants me to bash that old me too. But I liked him. He was fun and easygoing and self-sufficient. So what do you think? Should I hate that old me? Should I pretend like I do? Should I stand up for him? Should I smile and nod?
Okay, Connor, let me ask you this. You hear any red flags there?
There's some red flags here, Joe. What does she think
you
about Gone Girl?
Yeah. Let's talk about 20s Joe for a minute. 20s Joe is okay.
Yeah.
20s Joe wasn't doing anything unusual, and 20s Joe was cognizant enough to know what was important to him. And then when those priorities changed, he changed with them.
That's right.
Good job, Joe.
Joe sounds like a good, solid
now,
guy.
I think so. And I don't think that you have anything to regret. I am weary of the idea that this is being brought up
a lot
and held against you. The phrase goes off on how awful.
I don't like when someone makes you want to feel bad about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Not even
yourself. Your past self, when you have demonstrated that you have, you know, matured or your priorities have shifted and you have acted upon that. That's good. That's great.
Yeah, you.
I mean, it's fun. You
grown
can joke about
matured.
It.
Yeah, I certainly am on the receiving end of jokes about my 20s, but it's never in a serious manner, and I would never be made to feel bad about that. It's troublesome when your significant other wants you to feel bad about the way you used to be, the way you used to be wasn't necessarily bad. You went out with your friends, you bought things you liked, and you had fun.
You weren't in the relationship that you are in now. Then, what I'm saying, like at the beginning of the relationship that you're in now,
you're just dating.
It was not and you hadn't signed anything. You hadn't said this is how it's going to be. You were learning how to be in a relationship with that person,
which is what everyone
does. So obviously, right, and there's nothing wrong with that. I would be concerned that that's going to be I don't know to the level of which this actually happens. Like if that gets brought up on a noon and a Saturday,
it's like
and
a regular Tuesday activity.
Like if
Joe
that's the case, run
3 years ago. Yeah,
Joe should run. if that's what it is. If it's just, you know, kind of ribbing and it's fun or whatever. If it's causing actual conflict, I don't like that.
Or if it's causing him to actually feel bad about himself.
Yeah, I don't think you should feel bad about yourself.
Good.
You're self-aware. I mean, you were what a person is supposed to do in their 20s. You're supposed to learn what you like in the things, and you've shown, like, hey, this is how I am. And there's nothing wrong with it. I keep wanting to say you grew up, but I don't even think that's that.
I think the growing up comes where he has recognized that his behavior or lifestyle didn't fit with the relationship, so he made modifications.
Or the things he wanted.
Right, so,
yeah,
like...
Because he felt that was worth it.
Yeah, so he matured. And that's a good thing. Everyone does that. Everyone, no one, for the most part, no one really acts the same way.
Could be so many people that you're referring to right now that the mind boggles.
I think, again, from as Josh said, we don't know how seriously the lady goes off and how often the lady goes off on this. But if it's once in a while and it's kind of funny and it's done for humor, then that's fine. If it's all the time and she's constantly trying to get you to bash yourself, that's less than fine. And you've got something that you really need to look inside yourself. Do you want to really go through this for the next 30, 40 years?
Here's the thing. That doesn't get better. it doesn't.
Oh,
it only gets harder.
So, Joe, I'm sorry that that's what's happening, but you should take a look at yourself in the situation and see how much it actually is hurting you, because the person you're with shouldn't be hurting you like that.
No, especially if you're doing the right thing now.
Just show her how much worse it could be.
There's no women out there who are like, I bet these guys could help me. And you know what? Good call.
Well, here's the thing. Those are our emails. We had a couple we didn't get to. We're running long, which is fine, but we didn't want to go super long. So thanks for writing. And first of all, hopefully everyone took this in the spirit it was intended, which is entertainment and... with entertainment with a heart is what I like to call it. I like to refer to our show as entertainment with a heart. So
that's an awful tagline.
Yeah. Well, I've already put it on the website. It's too late.
Pick of the week comic book website.
Entertainment with a heart. It's coming to the Hallmark Channel. We hope we brought some interesting insight, but also mostly we just hope we made you laugh, especially if you're one of the people who wrote in. We just try to be entertaining. We make no promises. If you took our advice and things go horribly wrong, we make no guarantees. No, we offer no cash back.
We don't know.
We don't. We're barely getting by ourselves. So,
hey, man, 10 years.
In the future, I'm going to find you buried in the New Hampshire woods. Just one day.
Anyone would blame her.
One day you'll just never be heard from again.
It's fine.
Contact at iFanboy.com is where these people wrote in. You can call our voicemail line at 888-FANBOY-226-2697 to tell us who you are, where you're from. Keep it around 30 seconds. That's how you get on the show. That's how you get to be part of the fun. Remember, fun. That's what these things
fun.
Are.
Fun.
Head over to
iFanboy.
Oh,
I got this.
You didn't assign people to this part of the script, so I went ahead with it.
I know, but you just keep reading anything in front of you. It doesn't say his name. Go to iFanboy.com. You can comment on this show. I would love to hear other people's advice.
Yes, absolutely.
I want to know what you think. I think that would be really cool to read. We did talk about comics at the beginning. You could talk about those, too. You can talk about this week's books. You can find all of our other podcasts. You can find all of our other content. You know, like there is like all that where do I start stuff? That's all still there. You think, geez, I really want to they're going to redo this Constantine thing. What do I do?
Josh,
that's all there.
Josh and I had a fun time this week going through some old top five articles and laughing about how silly they were.
Man, top five was great.
So if you missed
that. I say that like it was fun.
You can go back and read those. They're still all there.
You can follow us at facebook.com/iFanboy or at Fanboy on Twitter. And you can follow us individually at J.A. Flanagan or at C.S. Kilpatrick. On the internets.
And if you'd like to show, write a review on iTunes, please. Or better yet, tell your friends about us. Help spread the word. If you're at a wedding, you spend a lot of money at it, you might as well have a good time and tell everyone about how the Fanboy Pick a Leak podcast. I'm sure they all want to hear
what
about
if you're,
it.
What if you're at a wedding and you're sat next to a guy who hosts a podcast you like a lot? Should you tell him that at the wedding, Connor?
Did that happen to you?
No, that happened to you.
No, I wasn't sitting next to him.
Oh, you're at the table.
I was at the table next to the table he was at.
Okay.
And he said hey to me, and it was a college wedding, so I thought, I don't remember you, but, you know, it was a long time ago. And he's like, big fan of your show. And I was like, oh, I'm not expecting that at a wedding, but I appreciate it. We chatted. It was fine. It was nice. But I just sometimes you're just not in the mind space to be the guy in the podcast. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're just doing the chicken dance.
No, I can honestly say I'm never doing the chicken dance.
But if you ever see us at
a
wedding,
if
you ever see us at a wedding, say hi. We're lovely people. Josh will do the chicken dance with you.
I'm not going to be dancing, so I've got time.
You'll need something to do.
I do.
So I don't even know where we are in the script anymore.
By the way, we
talked last week about all the weddings I've got this year or the week before.
Yeah.
I got another one.
Is there another one?
Yeah. There's five.
What the hell?
I know.
This is why we're telling this guy not to get married.
I know.
Give your friends a break, for Christ's sake.
A lot of travel. So I like weddings.
It ain't cheap for them either.
I really enjoy them. So, and I got a text message from the ex-iFanboy staffer whose wedding it is after he listened to last week's show, ribbing me on it. So
I recognize that I wouldn't have gone, but I'm a little upset I wasn't invited.
I haven't been officially invited either.
Yeah.
But the reason I feel I am is because I'm responsible for them getting together.
That's true. I also feel that if I said I would go, I would be invited. So it's fine. I just worked that all out for me. It's fine.
You're gonna get a text message now, and what's happened is you forced his hand. He's gonna have to invite you.
I don't want him to do that because it costs money to even invite people. Then it's a whole thing. I'm not going.
So your message to the anonymous staffer is don't invite me to your wedding. I don't want to go.
I mean, it would be nice.
That's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. If you're an ex-staffer or not, until next week, I'm Connor.
I'm just Josh. I'm no Eros.
You're Eros the God of Love. What happened?
I'm no Eros. I think that's here.
I hope we didn't ruin any relationships this week.
You never change. I don't know though. As the stars shine above, well, you're nobody till somebody loves you. So find yourself somebody.